99th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. I just got back from Sacramento, California, and the California International Marathon. So that was a fun weekend. Sacramento is becoming one of my favorite cities in California. The marathon was great. Not so much because of my finishing time, but just because it went well and I came out not hurt, and the experience was really, really good. We signed up for the VIP option, and what that gets you is a charter bus ride out to the start. So at the CIM marathon, they take you out 26 miles and you run back in. So you get a charter bus out to the start, and then you get a heated tent where they have bagels and bananas and waters and private porta potties. And if you've done marathons, you know that's a big perk. So you get to sit on a chair and wait for the marathon to start, which is about an hour or so after you get out there. I think we left at 4:30, 4:45 on the bus. And then basically you put your clothes in a bag, give it to the people in the truck right outside the tent, head out onto the course, hear the national anthem, and start running. You meet the VIP host at the end of the race. They take you into a nice, I guess it's a government building, where they have a breakfast. And you have your warm clothes there waiting for you. And they have coffee and hot chocolate if you like. And a variety of potatoes and non-vegan food. But they also had some cereal and they had a big fruit bowl. And so I had potatoes in the fruit bowl. And go on your merry way. So it's a great way to run a race, especially if you're from Florida and you go to California and the start temperature is 38 degrees. So, you know, that made it nice. I can say I really wasn't cold at any time. I wore shorts and a short sleeve shirt and arm warmers, and I was very comfortable throughout the race. So that was good. It is touted as a Boston Marathon qualifier course, and a lot of people do qualify for Boston there. I did not, nor did I think I was going to be in the running for that, but it's one of the reasons why it's called a Boston qualifier is a net downhill. Well, again, if you live in Florida and you think downhill, we think, you know, starting from one place and ending at another. This is not exactly true for this marathon. It's up and down, and there's a fair amount of hills, probably through mile 18 to 20. 20, there's a bridge that you have to go up, and that bridge is, you know, kind of a leg killer at mile 20. And then it, for the most part, declines or stays flat until you get back into town for the finish. So it's not a super, super easy course by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it's still 26.2 miles, and there are rollers. And it made it interesting that it was, you know, that they're rolling hills. But again, for somebody that trains on flat, it's not necessarily an easy marathon, but I really do applaud the whole race setup. It's very, very well organized. Again, the people that run the VIP program, you know, they recognize you by name when you walk in. You know, you get a hat, and you know, there's a pasta dinner. They give you a pair of socks at the end. And you get all that the warm clothes or the warm tent. So it certainly makes it worthwhile. They have a nice expo for a race of that size. So we walked around there and had some Clif Bar samples. So that, you know, it's Clif Bar products are vegan friendly products. So we do sample those. They had some sprouted bread to sample with some fruit spread. So that was good. And they had some talks. We didn't listen to any of the talks, but we walked around the expo for a while and then out on our merry way. The other thing that we, you know, like there is the farmer's market, and I'll get back to that later after we get past the race thing. But then they had a pasta dinner the night before the race with a marinara sauce option, a big salad option. So that was good. I'm becoming less of a pasta fan before races as time goes on. I just don't think it settles quite in your stomach, and I just don't think that it does you as much good as if you can get some other nutrients and antioxidants. So actually earlier in the day, We started out with oatmeal with blueberries and some fruit. And then at lunchtime, we went into was a vegan restaurant, and I had a curry with lentils and rice that had peppers and kale and eggplant and carrots, and it was kind of a hearty stew-like dish. And we also had some guacamole with sweet potato chips that were made. They were curried sweet potato chips, and the guacamole was made with lemon juice instead of lime juice. So those two flavors really went well together. And then there was a kale salad with roasted pumpkin and pomegranate seeds and walnuts. So that was really, really good. And that's kind of more my style before a race than traditional pasta dinner. So really on my plate for the pasta dinner, I had a huge bed of greens and a little bit of pasta and then all the fixings for the salad. And I just threw my tomato sauce on top of it. And I've just got to the kind of, that's how I eat lunch a lot, is to throw some sort of topping on my greens, whether it's soup or some sort of sauce or butternut squash sauce on top of my greens, and kind of steam them a little bit that way. And I enjoy that. And I feel like I'm getting those, you know, a couple cups of greens and the extra nutrients that way. So I really do enjoy it that way. As far as my race went, I started off good. And I kind of started off to see what I had. I had not done any speed work whatsoever between the Ironman and this race. I think I did a 16-mile long run and an 18-mile long run between that and over the 8 weeks between the Ironman and this race. So I wasn't really expecting to have a whole lot of speed in me. I also was nursing some sort of Achilles ankle type issue. I'm not really even sure what the problem is, whether it's a calf tightness, which I think is part of that. I also think I have some plantar fascial tightness, but I was getting some discomfort on both sides of my lower ankle, a little bit into the Achilles when I would train on the long runs. That really kind of slowed me down and hampered my mileage and certainly any speed work. So I was kind of just happy to get through the race without hurting myself. My biggest fear is actually straining an Achilles and being sidelined. I had Achilles strain once that put me off for 8 weeks, and I didn't want any part of that. So I was just kind of happy to get through the race at a pretty good pace. So I went out, and I actually, you know, my feet were cold when we started, and I didn't have any discomfort in my ankle at all. And so, you know, for me, I was running 9:20. 9:30 pace for a few miles, and you know, then the wheels kind of fell off when the hills started, and I, you know, started my, you know, lack of running that pace for a while fell off. So at about 7 or 8, 9 miles into it, my pace started to slow, and then I had the slowish middle miles, but I was able to kind of get it back together in the last 3 or 4. You know, the pace started picking up again, you know, so I was happy. I finished, you know, with, I think, a 10:23 mile. So, you know, and the worst mile was still under 12-minute miles. So for, you know, an old lady doctor, not too horrible. I wish it could have been better. But again, the idea was to get through the race and not and to not come out hurt on the other end. And what's funny about this little problem that I have going on, the more I run and get stretched out, the better it seems to feel. So after the race, it didn't hurt at all. And it's not really been hurting since the race. Maybe a little, you know, as my quads get less stiff than the Achilles, I start to feel that area a little bit. But so I don't think there's any injury. I think it's more of a tightness. And I did change shoes and went to a shoe that's a little bit more of a heel raise in it, just because I think I might need a little bit more support, even though I hate to admit it, at least for now. So I think, you know, it was more, I have more of a overuse issue going on than any kind of terrible injury. But as runners, you know, everybody, you know, you're always worried, when do you stop? When do you keep going? And I've kind of found that a lot of these niggles, so to speak, you end up doing better if you just kind of keep running, but maybe back off the pace and you keep yourself stretched out. I've never had much success at just stopping. You know, it always seems like I just quit running for a while, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, or, you know, it's been up to 6 weeks, and then it still hurts, but I've just had it, and I start running again anyway, and the discomfort eventually goes away. So I think that you have to keep moving, and I think that, you know, being totally stopping is not the answer. Certainly, if you can bike ride or swim, it's certainly better. But I do think that sports-specific endurance is important. So no matter how much you bike or swim, you're not going to have your running speed in, or, you know, you're not going to have your bike speed in if you're just swimming. So it helps you some, but it's not going to get you really where you want to get. I carry a handheld water bottle with me when I run, and I only use water. I don't do any sports drink. They had an electrolyte solution called None on the course, but I take gels, and I found that taking gels doesn't mix well with any kind of electrolyte drink, such as Gatorade or Powerade or any of those. So I just stick to water and the gels. I like having a handheld because I don't like to be in the crowd at the aid stations. So I take about half to three quarters of a smaller handheld bottle, and I use that. And then when I need to fill it, I go to the aid station where there's the pitcher and actually directly pour, if I can, have them pour into my water bottle. After you've done some Ironman, and, you know, Ironman has a set of rules that you're not supposed to throw anything. You know, they have garbage cans. You're supposed to hit the garbage can, and you're not supposed to put your gel wrappers, and you're actually penalized if you don't put your gel wrappers in the garbage can. And I think it's a great thing. I think people seeing aid stations on TV where you take a drink and you throw the cup down has become the norm. And so when you come through these aid stations, there's thousands of paper cups that are thrown down that are half drank. And if they're electrolytes solution, that becomes sticky. And if there's bananas or orange peels, that's all over the road, and that becomes stickies, and gel wrappers become sticky. I don't think that needs to happen. You know, I'd like to see more people carry a handheld, you know, unless you're an elite runner that's going to drink from their own bottle at a station. Carrying a handheld is not going to slow you down that much. And at least if you take a cup, put it in the garbage can that they have all around. You know, I feel bad seeing all these volunteers have to rake these cups for, you know, 100 yards after the station because people either carried them with them or threw them down all over the place and the wind blows them. So if you are running a marathon, think about carrying your own bottle and just filling it up. I think that's a lot nicer way to go about it. And I always take my gel and I just stick it in my hand, or my handheld has a little bit of a pouch on the front. I'll throw it in there till I get to the garbage can and put that in. It's just a much nicer way to go about things. And, you know, it saves the volunteer. What a mess after these races, you know, to have to clean up all this stuff. And, you know, cities would be much happier having races if, you know, they weren't trashed afterwards. So, you know, I don't think it's a license to litter just because you're running a race. Pet peeve of mine anyway. And plus, I don't like tripping over the cups people are throwing down all over the place. The race itself, again, started 26 miles out of town, and you run in. And a lot of the beginning was kind of small neighborhoods and some roads that didn't have a lot of people on it. But as you got closer to town, there was more and more people and more and more support. And it was nice. There was plenty of support going on. The race, I think there was 6,000 marathoners and a couple thousand of relay people. So there was enough people that there was a nice crowd on the road, but not enough that it was boxy. And that, you know, so you didn't have to veer one side or the other to go around people. So that made it really nice. And Sacramento is a really nice city. To me, it's a city. It's got a town type feel to it. When you run into town and the city, you start running into the big buildings, and then you finish going up to where the Capitol is. So you see the picture of the Capitol, or you see the Capitol in the background and their big Christmas tree. So it's a really pretty finish. The buildings all around there are nice. Even though it's kind of Northern California, there's a few palm trees and there's orange trees, and then there's some big pine trees and oak trees. So it's a real mix of foliage that you see as you're running. There's even some redwoods. I also think if you've not run a marathon and you want to get involved in the experience, a relay is a great way to start. I know I've done one marathon relay and we had a great time, and you know, we have some of the best memories of doing a marathon that way. So people run lengths of 5 to 8 miles. There's usually four people, and it's a great way to cheer on other people. So if you're just getting into marathoning or getting into running and you're afraid to step up to the half or you're not quite ready, get your friends and do a marathon relay. That's really good. So this marathon does offer that. So it's certainly a worthwhile thing to look into. My next event is this Sunday. I'm doing the Holiday Half Marathon in Clearwater Beach, Florida. And so I don't know how recovered I'll be. My legs are, it's Wednesday that I'm recording this, and my legs are still a little sore. So we'll see what happens by Sunday. So I'm certainly not going to probably break any barriers of speed then either. But again, it's a nice race. People dress up and wear reindeer ears or elf ears, and it's a dress in red and green. So it's a nice holiday run. So I'll enjoy that. And we'll come back and do some Christmas decorating. And the next marathon won't be to the end of January, will be the Miami Full Marathon. So hopefully I can get some speed work done in there and keep myself healthy until that point. I'd like to get some strength training in. And of course, the big event will be April 21st when we do our first 50K in Mendocino, which is very hilly, and a trail run, which we've never done before. So a lot of work to be done getting ready for that. So I'll keep you posted of my training, and hopefully there are some smart things that I'll do as well as some goofy things, but I will keep you posted on how things go. I will say I'm still doing the push-ups. Today was 89 day. I'm up to 35 push-ups, and you know, I must say after a marathon, usually my upper body is sore around my shoulders or sides. I don't know, from time to time, or you tend to hunch your shoulders at the end when you get tired. I had no upper body soreness at all, and I'm really going to attribute to the daily push-ups that I'm doing. So that's a reason enough for me to keep doing the push-ups, and you know, even to add more. So I think that's really, really a good thing to do, and the planks and everything, it keeps your body in line. So I'd encourage anybody that's doing any running at any basis, you know, finish your run and do some push-ups and work your way up. I think it does nothing but help. I also had the great pleasure of meeting Timmarie Hagenberger in person. She is the author of The Foodie's Bar Way and is also a professor of nutrition in Sacramento. She's going to be one of the guest lecturers at my nutrition conference January 21st. So I was able to have dinner with Timmarie and her husband and two children. She has a wonderful family. She's very energetic. She's going to be a great speaker for the conference. So again, if you haven't booked your ticket to come into Florida, to Punta Gorda, for the second annual plant-based nutrition conference, it's on eventbrite.com. Get your tickets and book them. Timmarie will be giving a talk as well as a cooking demo. We talked about some of the things that she made demo, including a sushi salad that she and her daughter have designed. A little different from mine, but very exciting. And I think you'll find it her information very good. And so she and Dr. Clapper will be speaking, as well as myself. And again, then she'll be doing a cooking demonstration, and we'll have recipes for all that at the conference. And so again, eventbrite.com for that, the website to get your tickets. But we went to a sushi restaurant, and it was called Lou's Sushi. So if you're in Sacramento, I'm going to highly recommend you to go to Lou's Sushi. We waited for probably an hour in this tiny little restaurant, but it was unbelievable vegan sushi. And you think, well, how could they do it? But there were jalapenos, there were daikon radishes. It was beautiful, beautifully presented. There were asparagus, again, some carrot and zucchini, but all different varieties of sushi, very artistically presented and very tasty. So certainly worth the wait. And, you know, I really enjoyed getting to meet Timmarie and her family. And, you know, it's nice to see two plant-strong children that are very active and doing well. Her daughter's 9 and her son is 13. They both play soccer. I think her daughter dances as well. They're excited about good food. they were very well behaved. They're calm yet energetic, pleasant to be around. So I'm going to, you know, give kudos to Timory and her husband. And of course, plant-based nutrition, they looked wonderfully healthy. So, you know, if you have kids and you're worried about them being healthy on plant-based nutrition, you need not worry. The other thing I liked about Sacramento, there were so many options. We didn't get to our favorite Vietnamese restaurant for their vegan pho soup like we did last year. There's pizza place that has a lot of vegan options. We didn't get to that place either. There's a Thai restaurant that we didn't get to visit. We did go to the veg. Of course, we visited our favorite farmer's market. I didn't get to see the butterfly vegan and her pastries, but there was a tremendous amount of beautiful vegetables to choose from, and we actually got some cheddar cauliflower, which is a orange looking cauliflower, fresh Brussels sprouts. We got persimmons, blackberries, and munched on those, and actually even managed to bring the cauliflower and Brussels sprouts home and had them when we got home after the long plane ride. So when you get things really fresh, they do keep, and they were fine. So we got in last night and roasted the Brussels sprouts and the cauliflower and some potatoes. We also got some multicolored heirloom carrots and roasted those up. Had a salad. I have Swiss chard growing in the backyard, so I harvested some of that and a cucumber and tomato. And so we had a great dinner after getting off the plane that didn't take that long to prepare, and it was delicious and fresh. Changing the subject just a little bit, but more along the eyes of attitude and plant-based nutrition, I heard a wonderful quote from Andrew, his, in quote, Spud Fit Taylor. Andrew has spent the better part of a year living on potatoes as a way to control his food addiction and just kind of get his life in order from a nutrition aspect. He's lost over 100 pounds. But, you know, again, to, you know, the potato is a completely whole food. It has vitamin C, it has protein, it has fat, it has fiber. So, you know, obviously you can live very healthy. His laboratory values are all perfectly fine. Again, he's lost weight, he feels well, he's not been sick, just eating potatoes. But the biggest part that I was impressed with was a sentence that he said was that the best years of his life, he only ate potatoes. And in this time of year when it's the holiday season and everything is very food-centric, he went through a year eating potatoes and his eyes opened up to the other things around him. And I think that is, you know, we spend so much time focused on food that we miss out on a lot of other things. And his relationship and his friends and what he was able to do because he was feeling better all increased drastically while eating potatoes. So, you know, sometimes people think when they're going to do a whole food, plant-based way of eating that they're going to be so restricted. And, of course, you don't have to be restricted to potatoes like Andrew selected. And there's a tremendous variety to choose from. And you can prepare those very deliciously without oil and without a bunch of gunky sauces or, you know, dairy. But it comes down to that, again, it really, food is a nutrient, and you can still have a very active social life eating a plant-based diet. It's just kind of what you make of it. So I thought that was a really interesting quote that he threw out there on the interview. Would I recommend somebody doing a kickstart of a potato diet? No, not really. I mean, I think you could, and it certainly wouldn't hurt you. But, you know, I think, you know, you really, I think the chances of success, and especially long term, he plans to transition to a whole food plant-based diet. You know, I'm not so sure that that's the way to go. It certainly was for him, and he's done well. I think that if you know, it's a good way to think about transitioning to a plant-based diet, and that you can make it, you know, somewhat limited, so that you're just going to eat a variety. You know, you're going to keep your things limited, your food selection's limited for the week. you know, I think that when you're transitioning into a new way of cooking, if you think you have to cook something completely different from a recipe cookbook every night, you're going to be frustrated. You're not going to have the things on end. And if things don't taste good, then you're going to be frustrated. And if your family doesn't like them, then you're going to be frustrated. So I do think it's important to stick with simple things first. And, you know, just like last night when we had just roasted vegetables, nothing fancy, just put some spices on them and put them in the oven, and they were good. And we got really full, and it was very nutritious, and it was very colorful. It doesn't have to be fancy. Tonight we had vegetable soup, and it had, you know, every vegetable under the sun. And I ate three bowls. I'm very full. It was very nutrient dense. And I think we might have it again tomorrow night because it was really good and we have a lot of it and don't really want to cook tomorrow night. So it's an easy way to go. There's no rule that says you can't eat something more than one day in a row. And then save your, you know, recipes that you have to use a cookbook for the weekend when you have more time or when you've been able to think out and get to the grocery store. I think if you frustrate yourself that you have to go to the grocery store every day or you buy a bunch of stuff and you get so-called vegetable pressure, you can get really frustrated. So keep it simple, especially until you've established, you know, 7 or 8 meals that you really like and that you can make without, you know, having to go to an extensive cookbook to get, you know, the ingredients and follow the directions and take a long time to prepare. So just keep it simple and the transition will go a lot better. We ate oatmeal every morning for breakfast, had a variety of toppings, mostly blueberries and nuts. We also had available fresh fruit, so there was apples, bananas, persimmons available to have along with the oatmeal. And, you know, so you get some nutrients to get you going first thing in the morning. And you can literally do that anywhere. You know, people make oatmeal in the coffee pot in the hotel. And of course you can, you know, go to a Starbucks or a coffee shop and just about every place has oatmeal. So it's an easy find and you can find some fruit to add to it. The other good thing that happened to us after the race, we decided to go to Napa for a day and we went to our favorite winery, which is Cliff Velovino. And they have a food truck there, but usually they don't have anything plant-based, so we didn't even ask, but they gave us a card and said, you know, here's a ticket for a free, you know, entree at the food truck. And we didn't even really address it, and they actually came back and said, well, how about some bruschetta? And of course, we went out, and they brought something out with cheese, and it's like, oh, you know, I'm sorry. They just didn't really catch on as far as vegetarian go. But they actually turned around and came back, and they brought us roasted Brussels sprouts and this giant kale salad with walnuts and pomegranate and lemon juice. It was absolutely delicious and filling. So I felt so good after the marathon. I know they have the potatoes at the finish and fruit, but then we had the Brussels sprouts and this big kale salad, and that really filled us up for the rest of the evening. So that was really, really good. And I really do think that goes a long way to aid in recovery from an endurance event, because if you remember, the kale helps you to produce nitric oxide. The fruit gave us lots of vitamin C's, which are antioxidants. And, you know, here it is Wednesday. My quads are a little bit sore still, but the rest of me feels good. And I really attribute the fast recovery to how you eat afterwards. You know, running a marathon or doing a triathlon is not a license to eat poorly. And I just saw where an ultra runner died suddenly, you know, in quotes, unexpectedly at a young age. And again, a lot of these people eat very, very poor. And because they're burning so many calories, you think it's a license to eat what you want. But you need those nutrients to help your body, because you're beating your body up a lot when you're breaking down muscle and you're doing the pounding for, you know, whether it's running, swimming, biking, or whatever, hiking. And you need to have antioxidants to help clear those things. So it's really important to eat a very nutritious recovery meal. I've discovered a new pumpkin this year that I really, really like. It's called the Carnival Pumpkin, and it's a little bit bigger than a grapefruit, and it's yellow with green stripes, and it's round. And it has such a great flavor. And what I've been doing is microwaving it for 3 or 4 minutes until it's soft enough that I can take a knife and cut it through horizontally in strips about a centimeter to 2 centimeters wide, and then just baking them the rest of the way till they're tender. And the skin actually becomes so tender that you can eat it as well. And it's very, very sweet. And so last night we had that as well with our roasted vegetables. But I've had it on a couple different salads. At our Thanksgiving dinner here in Punta Gorda, they stuffed it with some lentils. But it's just so good by itself and so sweet that I can't get enough of these. You know, I grew up eating butternut squash, and for the most part as really the only pumpkin that I ate. And most of the time, pumpkin was in a pumpkin pie, which, you know, again, contained a bunch of sugar and milk and everything else. And I'm not a huge fan of acorn squashes. I don't think they have a whole lot of taste, and you have to do so much to doctor them up. I mean, they're good if they're stuffed with quinoa and all this other kind of stuff. But this pumpkin is so good by itself that, you know, if you haven't missed the season where you are, get some and try. You can probably get them at a pretty low cost now that Thanksgiving's over, because they're very ornamental as well. You know, in the past, we've bought these things as, you know, set them around and then they go bad. But, you know, I'm embarrassed to say this year, we, you know, finally we ate these things, and boy, what have I been missing. So now I'm really hooked on looking for these little pumpkins called carnival pumpkins. When I was growing up, Christmas was a time of baking a lot of sweets, and there were a lot of traditional cookies and candies. I still bake at Christmas, not near to the extent. And now, you know, each year I kind of hone it in a little bit more and more. I've got rid of the traditional cookies that require a lot of butter and sugar, and have gone more to the fruit-filled cookies or gingerbread or pumpkins or apple, or, you know, apple-type sweets. They're just as sweet, they look just as pretty, and they don't have all that butter and sugar in them. I encourage you to, again, Dr. Furman has some good sweets recipes in his book, and there are several, the China Study has some good sweets in their book, but look online, and most of the time you can take the oil out of these recipes, if there are any oil in the recipes, and either just use the nuts that are in the recipes. You can cut the sugar back, way back, substitute some maple syrup instead, and they turn out just as good. So experiment with them. Don't wait to the last minute. I used to wait to the last minute to do my Christmas baking and, you know, try to multitask and bad things happen. So, you know, experiment a little bit now. And so you have, you know, before people come over, you can kind of get the recipe down. But, you know, sometimes you just want maybe a cup of coffee and a little sweet. It doesn't have to be the sickening sweet stuff. I can tell you, you know, as I've talked before I was plant-based way back when, I used to have a really big sweet tooth. And at Christmas time, we'd make all these cookies, and I would, for breakfast, eat cookies and coffee. And I used to get such bad indigestion. And I used to blame it on the coffee, but the reality was it was the oil in the cookies. And if you make cookies, you'll know that it is just so much butter and sugar that no wonder people get sick. So I feel much better after I've got this out of, you know, and went to sweets that, you know, don't have so much of this stuff in them. I saw a lady in the office today, and she was only on 2 medications. And her cholesterol was a little bit elevated, and her liver enzymes were a little bit elevated, and she had fatty liver. And we started going over, and she said, I take a lot of supplements. And I was like, well, what are those supplements? And she started to list vitamin E, vitamin K, calcium, a multivitamin, milk thistle, vitamin D, herbs for her abnormal glucose. And it's like, wait a minute. You know, none of these work. You just, you know, you need to change your nutrition so that so vitamin E is a good antioxidant, and we need antioxidants to fight the free radicals that are, as proteins break down from wear and tear, or if you eat animal products, you generate free radicals, or if you inhale something that's bad, you generate free radicals. So we need antioxidants, but we know by taking a vitamin E tablet, it doesn't help at all. And if anything, it may hurt a little bit and perhaps even increase your risk of bleeding. So that tablet's not any good. She took a vitamin K, And of course, vitamin K is abundant in green leafy vegetables, and there's no reason to take a vitamin K. It's for clotting, and nobody has a problem with clotting unless they have clotting factor abnormalities or they're on blood thinners. So that vitamin K is, you know, certainly something you don't want to take on a regular basis. There's no evidence that taking calcium will prevent any kind of bone fractures. And I'm happy to report that my 83-year-old mother tripped and fell out the stairs today going to get the mail in her flip-flops. And she, you know, we joked about it. She did her bone density test. She fell down and got back up. Not only was she very mobile in getting back up because she's so active and could get off the ground, but she didn't break anything or hurt anything. And, you know, she's not even sore from it. So, again, that attributes to eating a whole food plant-based diet and being very healthy and very mobile. And back to this lady, you know, milk thistle for fatty liver. Well, the idea of the fatty liver is you need to get rid of the fat around your midsection. So, again, Dr. Furman, or actually it's Dr. McDougall that has the quote, "You're the fat you eat and the fat that you wear." So by decreasing your weight and decreasing the fat in your diet, the fatty liver will go away. Taking a pill won't make it go away. Taking vitamin D, if your levels are low, there's perhaps a reason for that. If your levels are low and you can't get out in the sun, or you have some absorption problem, or you've had some skin cancers to the problem that you're really afraid, you know, that's to be discussed. But certainly, you know, too much vitamin D can be an issue. So you really do have to have your vitamin D levels checked. And then herbs to have better glucose metabolism. Again, it's what you eat. It's not a pill to make your pancreas work better. That's just not going to happen. If you eat a whole food plant-based diet that's low in fat and low in and unprocessed and high in fiber, your sugars are going to be just fine. So there was a tremendous amount of money that she really saved today by not, you know, if she doesn't buy these anymore. And she was happy not to. But everybody's trying to do the right thing and people want to be healthier, but they just don't realize that good old-fashioned nutrition is really the answer. I was happy to see a study presented in the American Journal of Cardiology. It was their website that looking at a review of eating nuts in prospective studies. This study was published in the BMC Journal by a physician from the Imperial College of London. And basically looking at nuts, about 1 ounce a day decreased the incidence of coronary artery disease by 29%, cardiovascular disease in general by 21%, cancer by 15%, even improved respiratory disease by 52%, diabetes 39%, and even infection 75% improvement. The interesting thing about this is that more was not better. So, you know, running out right now after hearing this and buying a large container of Planters nuts is not the answer. It's a very limited, low-dose amount can be helpful. And it's, again, back in that 1 ounce range. So it's not, that's less than a quarter cup a day. So it doesn't take much to help. So it's worth putting those walnuts on your oatmeal or making a salad dressing with a few nuts in it. But, you know, looking to eat a bunch of nuts every day to improve your health, that's not the answer. So nuts are good. Nuts are certainly better than processed oil. And again, you know, some more information looking at, you know, a lot of different studies that, you know, a few nuts probably are beneficial, but a lot of nuts are not. And, you know, that's a, you know, not putting words in Dr. Esselstyn's mouth or anything, but I do believe that, you know, one of the reasons why he has people stay away from them is that one thing leads to another and people start snacking on nuts. And again, if you're having trouble with weight loss and you know you can't lose weight or you're not, the scale's not moving, you have to look at these high, very high calorie items like nuts. So in that case, you know, aim more towards seeds. But again, more towards whole foods. But if you're thin and your cholesterol's under good control and you're losing weight, then adding some nuts to your diet is certainly can certainly be beneficial. I make a raw granola using nuts and seeds. It usually has walnuts, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds. And then it has a whole apple and then some spices, and it makes a dried granola. And again, that's very calorie dense. So what I do is, you know, I may put a tablespoon of that into my big bowl of fruit. So it gives crunch to my fruit. It gives a different flavor. The apple in it makes it very sweet. But I'm not just eating a bowl of that, because it would be way too high in calories and way too high in fat to eat a big bowl of it. So, you know, you have to look at things closely. You know, just because something shows some promise doesn't mean that it's okay to eat, an excessive amount of it. And I guess, you know, turning the table a little bit again, the last thing that I'll probably leave you with is, I'm watching a new TV show called This Is Us, and it's a really good program about a family and as the kids grow older. But one of the characters is morbidly obese, and she has a morbidly obese boyfriend, and she's been dealing. They went to Overeaters Anonymous, and she struggles with binging. He struggles with binging. At one point, he decided that he wasn't going to watch his weight. He just didn't care. And she actually wanted to break up with him because, you know, if she was going to try to get her weight under control and he wasn't, it wasn't going to work. And she was considering gastric bypass. And the doctor, psychologist, was discussing with her all the side effects of a gastric bypass. And, you know, she really was afraid of it, and she really had reservations. But she really was also at a point where she didn't know what to do, and she'd struggled her whole life with being morbidly obese. And anyway, he comes back into the picture, and I hope you guys, if you watch it, you know, it's a spoiler event, so turn this off. But he ends up having a heart attack, and he's a fairly young person in his 40s. And a similar thing happened here in our town, where a young nurse in his 40s that was morbidly obese died of a heart attack suddenly. And the comments that were made, you know, condolences, but everyone was so shocked. And I think that, you know, we as a society are so used to seeing people that are significantly overweight, but they're young. We don't think anything can happen to them. And there's this shock when somebody dies suddenly, if just because they're young. And it's like that number protects you. And it really doesn't protect you. We see more and more people having heart attacks in their 30s and 40s, more and more people with diabetes, fatty liver cirrhosis. So you can't wait to get it under control when you get older. And it's something that you have to start taking care of yourself now at a younger age. And it would be my hope that I take care of a lot of older folks that are trying to get better. But first, you know, I would love to reach more younger people, because this is where it's at. You know, the damage is being done right now in your 20s and your 30s, and certainly in your 40s there can be significant disease, even disease that kills you. So it's real important to take care of yourself now and not wait and try to backpedal and try to fix things after they're broken and terribly broken. And at this time of the year, it's a time where we all, you know, overindulge or have the potential to overindulge. But think of other ways to overindulge without injuring yourself. So I'll leave you with that in mind, that, you know, try to make things that are a little bit more healthy for others to enjoy. And there are a lot of other ways to make things delicious that aren't high fat and, you know, high salt and high sugar. There are a lot of delicious things out there that people are very happy with. And be happy with the people around you, not with what you're eating with the people around you. So again, if you have any questions for me, contact me at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. It's JAMIDULANEY @gmail.com. Look on the website at drdulaney.com. It's spelled out DOCTOR for information. Please come and visit us for the second annual plant-based nutrition conference at Twin Isles Country Club in Punta Gorda. We'd love to have you. That's the weekend of January 21st. So get your tickets on eventbrite.com. And next weekend, I promise, I have an interview and I'll talk with somebody besides Vinny the Cat and myself. So enjoy your week and enjoy your holiday season. Enjoy the people around you and make something healthy to eat.